This podcast contains strong language and mature content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Detained, a criminal justice podcast that seeks to examine real experiences from every perspective. I'm your host, Arish Rivers. It's a holiday weekend, and there's plenty going on outside. There's fireworks, there's cars, there's people. For the most part, I'm really not that tuned into it, but there are a few things that I can't help but have to lend my attention to. The fireworks, for one. I love fireworks, but I am in California. The state's a bit of a tinderbox, and we all remember what happened last year. To make it even better, that's coupled with a good amount of 5150 people walking by. And if you don't know what that is, that's basically code for the crazy folk outside. And we already had somebody try to set a fire across the street. Commercial area, not residential. But I realize I have a choice in whether I want to tune into this stuff or not. And it makes me remember when I was a kid how I would purposefully tune out to the news. That's not so much the case now, but my dad would ask me why I was so deliberate about turning it off. And my answer was simple. The news was depressing. It was nothing but who's dead and what's burning and who's being beaten. And I don't know that much has changed today. The relationship between the police and communities of color have really been in the spotlight. And I think it's important to realize that the stories we see on the news are not just one-offs. They are pieces of a long recurring pattern. And on this episode, I actually talked to my brother about his experiences and his place within that pattern. I hope you guys enjoy the episode and tune in for the whole thing.
When would you say that your first experience really was, man, as far as, I don't know, running into cops, getting hooked up, any of that shit?
I mean, the first experience from being harassed or the first experience from being, you know, arrested for something. I mean, those are, you know, those are kind of two different lines, because the first time I was ever arrested, I was 14 years old, you know, and growing up where we did, it was like, all right, if you're black, you make eye contact with the cop, he automatically going to make a U-turn and give you something, either talk to you, stop you. Bottom line is you're going to have some sort of contact. So my experience with the police has never really been pleasant, regardless of the fact that even as a child, I either wanted to be a fireman or a police officer. But, you know, our very own father was just like, fireman, cool. Police officer, nah, you don't want to do that, because when you're older, you'll understand. And as I became older and as I started to become harassed, badgered, bothered, fuck with, however you want to put it, it became more apparent that, you know, this is more of a threat than it is a social benefit for safety, if you will. In my shoes, at least. So the legal system, you know, as I got into it at the age of 14, has just always been something that has been set up to be a loop in one way or another. It's not really set up for anybody to succeed. And once you're in it, it's very easy to get in it, right? Get in trouble or whatever, but it's very, very hard to get out of it, because it's a monetary machine, right? It's for monetization. Once you fuck up, they're charging you for fines, or even your parents for fines, for probation monitoring, for you just to show up, sign a list, speak with somebody, check in and go back. So, I mean, there's many different angles that I have, you know, when we're talking about my outlook towards the legal system. And it really depends on different stages, because I've been affected by them at different stages in my life, as I am 41, approaching 42 now. So, I mean, I'll tell you, from my first contacts with them, and, you know, as a 6-year-old, are very different than when it was when I was 14. You know, at 6 years old, I walked the wrong way and I got lost and a cop picked me up and brought me back home, and it was cool. But, you know, I had to sit in the back of the car as opposed to in the front seat. And it's like, well, why that? You know, and you kind of start to put things together. Like, you know, even as a 6-year-old, I was even put in a position of somewhat of a threat. So, you know, you kind of have to look at it, as opposed to some of my other friends who, you know, this great friend of mine, Sergeant Landis, if you will, respectfully, He's had a different experience, and he's never really had a Mao experience, although he's witnessed me go through some of the things and the pages and the paces. So I just really think the legal system, wouldn't say a sham, but it's not set up for success primarily for Black youths or Black people in particular, or people of ethnicity.
You and I both kind of do this thing where we don't call it the justice system, right? We call it the legal system, because I've always felt that it hasn't really been about, you know, justice and even necessarily just doing right by anybody. It's just, what can we do that's legal? And you're right, it is a money machine. You know, working in bail bonds, I do see that, just like you mentioned, getting into the system, how easy it is to get in there. But this revolving door of just pulling people back in, of the monetary costs. And on a lower level, people want to look at individual agencies or whatever and say, oh, it's you guys. But what it comes down to, what I see, is a lot of money one way or the other being funneled back into the state or into unions sometimes, without getting too political or anything like that. What was one of the first experiences you had of harassment?
Oh, God, the first experience of harassment would have had to have been, man, I wasn't even in my double digits of age yet, man. We were in Walnut, myself, Tori, and I can't remember who else, man, but over in that particular area where we grew up, Beverly and Bel Air, we were over there off the horse trails, and, you know, we were just playing, not even drumsticks, just sticks. And, you know, we're hitting beats on the, you know, the little horse trail rail over there, the little fence. And, yeah, you know, just hitting little chops, hitting little beats, the little break beats or whatever, amen break beat, you know, non-threatening. I guess somebody had called the cops and maybe said that we were doing vandalism or chopping it down or breaking it down. But that was the first time I can recall an encounter with the cops, as to where, like, yo, this isn't like they told you in school where you go find helpers. You know what I'm saying? This shit is like, yo, the helper is getting ready to whoop my ass. And, you know what I mean? Telling me to sit down on a curb and yelling at me. And where's my mother and my father? And, like, yo, I'm of no threat. I'm a young Black kid with a part in my hair, dude, and a Speed Racer t-shirt on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have on karate shoes, nigga. Like, what kind of threat am I to anybody right now? So, you know,
the karate shoes that did it.
Yeah, definitely the karate shoes. You know what I'm saying? Because the karate shoes is not really, you know, the last dragon might have thrown him off. You know what I'm saying? He might have expected me to have the glow and turn and do some shit. I don't know, but it was pretty offsetting, man. It just threw me off. And then as I got older, you know, I would Anel and Donovan McQuarrie, you know what I mean? Motherfucking Little Ricky from Boys in the Hood. They both got their head split, or, you know, blood was drawn from their heads from harassment. I can recall that. And I was, at that time, I was in seventh grade. Donovan must have been in sixth grade, still at Oswald. Anel was probably a freshman, and it was at Cameron, God rest his soul, his birthday party, man. And I'll never forget that, by the West Covina Police Department. Dad went down there, filed the complaint. And this was, you know, early 90s, as to where Rodney King, I don't even think that got cracking yet. When that shit happened, dude.
You know, I remember Anel getting bloodied up, and yeah, that was not, Rodney King hadn't cracked off yet. And we were starting to get the outpouring of, you know, the quote, dangerous youth movies or whatever, you know. You got,
well, you had Colors and Boys in the Hood. It just came out. So yeah, it was just after Boys in the Hood. And so I'm not sure if the cop even knew that Donovan was, you know, part of the McQuarrie family, Darius's, you know, brother, and Howard's son and Shay's son. But at the end of the day, it was really a big deal, because mom, dad, Shay, and Howard ended up at the police station. You know, if it were nowadays, oh yeah, for sure, lawsuit would have been paid out. But back then, it wasn't taken serious. And it was just something that you had to endure, getting fucked with by the cops. Another instance is, I was coming back from football. Oh no, I'm sorry. I was coming back from band practice. And I remember walking over there by Stater Brothers, by Nogales Burgers, and we were going to Canyon Liquor. And, you know, I wasn't no angel. I might have been walking to go get some cigarettes, but I had no cigarettes on me at that point. And two sheriff deputies just ran up on me. And the ironic thing was, one of the sheriff deputies was one of my friend Nikki Phillips' father. You know what I mean? And when he rolled up on me and recognized who I was, that I, you know, his daughter played on my Pop Warner football team, and that he had known me from the time I was like 9 or 10, he was like, wait a minute. Okay, cool. Wait, fall back. How you doing? Or, what are you doing dressing like this? I'm like, well, fuck, it's baggy clothes and it's the '90s, nigga. This is how we dress. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I was
did he give you any kind of any reason why they rolled up on you, or just
You know, WWB, bro, walking while black, you know, and that was just, you know, they might have said we were dressed like gang members, but at the end of the day, okay, so now you're gonna fucking stereotype me just because I'm wearing Ben Davis, you know what I'm saying, and some Pumas. Like, that's just the style. If you really want to know what I'm talking about, go to the Super Cat and Criss Cross video, whole time, you know what I'm saying, and that's the way kids was dressing. Pumas, Ben Davis, and Dickies. You know, that's how we would flow. Even a little oversized, but it was the dress. And so I would get fucked with like that. And then another time, well, naturally, I got arrested when I was 14 when, you know, I was in the party crew scene or whatever. And dude had shot at me at a party. And I remembered his face because, motherfucker, I live in Walnut just like you'd have known this face in sixth grade. Okay. I saw the baseball bat in half and waited for his ass. And naturally, my little young dumbass, I was boasting and bragging, and I went to go pick up the bat after it was stashed, and I got arrested with the bat. You know what I'm saying? And bam, there we go. I'm in the legal system.
And well, at that age, I mean, that was young enough, or it's juvie, right?
So I was 14. I was 14 years old. So bang, I had a record, but wasn't too bad. I kind of cooled my jets after that and got more. I'd gotten back into football. Even in that, you know, you're wearing the football jersey, it's Thursday. And granted, I was not within the confines of the law. You know, I was 15 years old driving before I had a license, but cop made eye contact, U-turn, and busted me and all the homies in the car and had the car impounded. I personally think that, say, maybe I had one of my more lighter toned Anglo friends been driving, I don't think I would have been fucked with like that.
It's always a really interesting thing is to figure out or to think about how else it would have turned out differently. You know, for example, road rage is an interesting thing nowadays, right? Because, you know, I'm up here, I stay cool behind the wheel. And, you know, shit pisses me off. I'm a regular person driving around in California. I get mad, but I'm aware that people react differently. There's a different set of, I don't want to say consequences, but the events that will unfold, not might, but will unfold afterwards is an entirely different game.
Well,
and I feel most people are conscious
of. You already know. They try to string me up for fucking 20 years for kicking a woman's car who said I hit her with my car when she was on foot. So, I mean, it's very different. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're compounded 5, maybe 10 times more than someone else who might make that same infraction, you know, and I don't really think it's fair, man. And as black people, you know, especially me, shit, I'm a vegan. I don't need to be walking on eggshells in life. So it's, you know what I'm saying?
I like how you put that.
Thank you. At any point, though, it's highly significant to kind of watch your P's and Q's. And at 42, I've learned to just not even give in to these motherfuckers because it's only going to end up one of two ways. You know what I'm saying? You being the aggressor and you being put in jail because you are of the ethnicity you are, and almost by a unconscious and unstated disadvantage, you're wrong by default. And that's just how it's going to be. I've come to realize that this place, when you break down the laws, and I just had this conversation with Pops the other day while we was, you know, breaking bread or whatever. I was telling him these laws in this country weren't really put together with us in mind. You know what I mean? When they say all men are created equal, when we weren't even really considered a whole ass man, but 3/5 of one. So it's really sobering when you consider what the fabric of this nation is and how it was put together and how we weren't included and how we're not included. And so when we do fuck up, they can kind of really pull you any which way. And if you have money, you might get out of the situation. If you don't, yeah, bro, you're fucked. You're going to be like me. You know what I'm saying? I got in trouble in 2007, and I didn't get my way out of trouble until I wasn't able to expunge my shit until 2013, dude, 2014.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. That was exactly what was on my mind was, you know, and that was from the situation with the lady in the car, right?
I mean, both, bro. I mean, you know, even with my very own brother when, you know, he and I had that little scuffle, you know. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, it wouldn't have been shit. It just went, okay, two brothers getting into a fight, done deal, bang. But the fact that these motherfuckers tried to victimize me, make it look like I tried to murder my own little brother, you know, wipe his and your ass, bro. Like, That's impossible. I might try to fuck him up, but I'm not going to try to kill my brother, bro. And that's, you know, when we went to court, you know, I'm thankful that the judge was who he was for that second time. He's like, man, I've got five brothers and things happen. I'm not going to, you know, let the DA get a hold of this case as it is. I'll just go ahead and give you a wobbler. This is the deal. Wobbler, probation. You're released today if you wish to take that deal. Took the fucking deal, but what I didn't plan on taking was with the probation department of San Bernardino County, the complexities and the hurdles and hoops. These motherfuckers come to your house at random, make everybody sit down, and that shit wasn't cool. You know what I'm saying? So I myself, knowing the legal system by that point, you know, fortunately, Anel was kind enough to allow me to use his address, and I was able to switch probation departments to where my probation officer was like, look, man, don't get arrested. Don't do coke or heroin. Smoke all the fucking weed you want and just show up at these random drug tests when you need to, bro. I said, okay, cool. And the dude cut my probation in half. He's like, and another thing is you ain't got to pay these fucked up fines because I know as a felon, you can't get a job. So it was interesting to see how I was treated from my own people versus, you know, predominantly white county, if you will, just San Bernardino County. Yeah. You know, it was very, very, very different, you know. My probation department or office was on Crenshaw and Exhibition in L.A., you know, South Central, very black. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, you know, they knew what a threat looked like versus coming out here to San Bernardino, a guy who just had an argument or a physical confrontation with his younger brother. Yes, there was blood drawn, but I don't know 280-pound males that have a confrontation that won't draw blood. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At the end of the fucking day, it didn't have to be as bad as they made it. And so when I got when I was able to clear myself and clear the situation, started to kind of look at other things that I look back at. And it's, of course, it's unfair, bro, because there are people who got locked up for the same shit that I did. Same time, same county. And they motherfuckers were able to walk out of jail that day. But I must sit there for three months.
As a bail bondsman, I see the same thing. You know, and that's why, you know, the whole light of Prop 25 and everything. And one of the biggest things about that was taking the human element out of the decision for pretrial release and replacing it with a computer algorithm. And it was like, no. And that's when everything turned around, was when you had civil rights groups and things like that realizing, no, wait a second, the data that this is inherently based off of is skewed, is flawed, because it's based on a flawed system. Even now, they have prescriptions for pretrial release when people get arrested. And, you know, system of check marks, check boxes, and you can get released, you know, same day you get arrested.
Well,
now there are certain charges where you automatically don't go anywhere, but still we've seen people get released despite the fact that the written letter of the law as it is says this is not eligible for pretrial release.
Well, and the thing is, that's not even circumstantial as it is influential. Those with the check marks are already, as you said, skewed, bro. In fact, like, it's really unfair to even present that shit on the table. You know what I'm saying? Because they know what the fuck mm-hmm. they're doing, bro. They know exactly what they're doing. And this shit was presented when this administration stepped in and allowed things to happen. It's very unconstitutional when you look at the shit. It's just the way they dress up the verbiage that makes it okay to even bring to the forefront. You dig? I, for one, am almost insulted that they would even do that shit because we know what it's about. One day, my nieces, they're going to go ahead and get married to somebody. And let's say it's a brother or a Latino that they happen to marry. That cat himself, bro, he's going to be at a social disadvantage within that generation. Go even go ahead and look at our little cousin Casanova. Social mm-hmm. disadvantage from jump because of how he's born. You know, your daughters, they're beautiful. Being blended, they could go either which way and possibly pass. But you got to look at some of these other kids from their generation. You know what I'm saying? That might be, I mean, you know what I mean? It's just fucked up, man, how the world looks at things. Sadly, you know, it's the lighter kids that get the benefits and the darker that don't. I'm hoping that in the future, by the time, you know, your daughters, my nieces come of age, that things will be different to where, you know, if you ain't mixed, you ain't American.
That is the future. That's what I believe is the future. But you know what?
That's what it's going to be. And I hope by then the legal system will be treating everybody fairly across the fucking board, bro, because it's going to take that.
in my personal belief, in my experience. I've been jailed with some of the coolest white boys on the motherfucking planet. But as they get released, they look back at you like, man, I know it's fucked up, but I really don't want to be here. I'm going to take my white privilege and carry on, dog. Take care. I'll see you on the outside.
You know? Yeah. Seen that look. Seen that look myself. And it's kind of, it's one of those, like, you know what? I don't blame you. You know, when they give you that look. Like, I don't blame you, bro. I understand what it is.
Napoleon Dynamite face on and be like, lucky. You know what I'm saying? And just swallow it up, bro. Just, you know? Okay, Rivers, roll it up. You know what I'm saying? They tell you, roll it up. I'll be like, my spliff or my fucking, my bedding, nigga.
One of the things that is always really prevalent is the idea of the felony record, right? You know, when they see a felony arrest or a felony conviction on the record, how has that impacted you?
Oh, God.
Since kind of day one, like, what would you say?
I mean, it got to the point where I would just go on job interview. I mean, look, man, the day my niece was born, I walked out of a job interview. You know what I'm saying? Just because, hey, as a black man in California, nobody really takes you serious. But then as a black man with a felony on your record. So I would go on these job interviews, man, and I
speak proper and I'm articulate and I look the part and I look well and I'm very presentable, but that fucking felony, bro, it's like wearing a white suit, but some asshole came with a booger green fucking paint can and just threw that shit on your ass and you got, you know what I'm saying? You got to go through your day just rocking that. But that day is your life or your probationary period. It's bad, bro. There's no hope. I'll be honest, dude, because there was nothing for me to look forward to other than walking my dog and hitting the bong and playing video games, dude. You're literally a ghost. You're just existing. You're not even living, bro. There's nothing to thrive on. I'm thankful that we have a gracious family, dude, and that my father and, you know, even as abrasive as mom can be, dude, they're somewhat understanding and they're merciful, dude, because plenty of other Afro-Latino or black men in that situation are living on the bridges, walking across bridges on Skid Row, you know what I'm saying, smoking crack, God knows what else, bro, for survival. And I would have killed myself from long time, bro. Like, I had nothing to live for. My niece Jasmine, bro, that was probably another reason to live, just to see her little face and her to wiggle, say, Tio, my dad's gone, my mom's gone, can you make me something? Well, fuck, I love kids and I'm not going to let my niece starve to death. You know, I guess I'll kill myself another day. You know what I'm saying? Like, fuck, Jazzy's got to eat. You know what I mean? Like, fuck, I can't kill myself in the kids' home. Shit.
Well, let me ask your perspective on this, because, you know, living here in the San Francisco Bay Area, it's interesting. We got Tesla, you know, Amazon has headquarters up here. And there's a lot of tech. And then, of course, there's always UPS, FedEx, all that kind of stuff. But you see, and they will hire people with felony records, but the trade-off is intense hours for what looks like a lot of money on paper, because it's usually more than they've ever seen offered on a, you know, an hourly 9-to-5, if you will. But it's still not enough. Reason these people still come back with theft charges
I'll even say this, kid. Times have changed, because when I took my L and my F or whatever, if you will, my felony, UPS wasn't hiring none of them cats. I mean, these certain laws had to be passed. I couldn't even vote for two elections, dude. That's how serious the things was. You know what I'm saying? Like, Obama was in office. I rooted for you, but I couldn't vote. You know what I'm saying? The laws were different, bro. Like, I couldn't even have a job, man. And what do I think? I mean, the only job that I did get was at a warehouse, and I had to swallow a lot of my dignity because the dude was just, he knew my situation. I had to just swallow a lot of shit talk until one day I was like, you know what, man? Fuck you. I'll beat the fuck out of you real quick. And I had to be careful even how I said that to him, because he could have went and told my probation officer. So you have to subject yourself to a lot of mistreatment. You kind of almost degrade yourself just for the sake of getting minimum wage. From, it's either minimum wage or nothing. It's either maltreatment or nothing. And I would rather hold my head high in a fucked up predicament and at least know that my dad will break me off with $40 so I can grab an eighth for my mental maintenance, as opposed to put myself through the muck mud shit and disparaging comments and remarks from somebody for $300 every 2 weeks. Man, fuck that. So when you put that into effect in terms of like UPS, FedEx now hiring, I mean, yeah, they're hiring you, dude, but what are you reducing yourself to? You know, are you going to allow yourself to be spoken to as a child, or are you going to hold your dignity as a man? What's it worth? I, for one, being as calculated as I am and almost unfortunate in the same circumstance, I don't have children. So I could tell a motherfucker, fuck you in a heartbeat, I'll beat your ass. Whereas to you can't do that because my beautiful nieces might have to suffer a couple of unpleasant meals that they don't want to necessarily eat when they could have eaten something else. You know what I mean?
It's a bit complicated when you toss in dependence.
Yeah, exactly. only thing I might have to suffer is switching my brand of dog food. You know what I mean? For my, you know, you ain't eating 100% salmon anymore, nigga. You gonna have some fillers and that shit. So ultimately, life ain't gonna be so good anymore, pup. Sorry. So you know that's what that is, man. You just have to reduce yourself and swallow your pride and your dignity for the sake of a check. I've never been one to fully understand that. I could work with people and not for people, and I've almost been a fool in that way, but I've been able to hold my head high at the same time while I make my paycheck and whistle while I work, and I'm thankful for the people who've been able to give me that blessing. But to what some of these other cats got to reduce themselves to for the sake of a check, man, I couldn't do it. I respect them for it, but at the same time, I think it's a fucked up ordeal, you know?
By all accounts, you're a law-abiding citizen, and yet you still have had these experiences that, you know, it seems like it's just kind of in store for people of color, that, you know, they have these, the society has these biases, going to run that way. And of course, we know the young cats aren't going to listen, but having had your unique experience, man, what would you try to drum through anybody's skull in terms of dealing with the legal system?
Well, first off, shit, man, you know, all resources lead back to ego, man. If you could just release your ego, drop the mucho macho and the desire to always be right or have your say, or just fucking be king of the hill in all circumstances and situations, I think that, for one, would alleviate much of the shit we get ourselves into, bro. Like, the whole mucho macho bravado's gotta go. Like, I still carry a bit of it, you know what I mean? From my days playing football to soccer and soccer back to football to riding motorcycles to how I drive when I work. I mean, there's still a little bit of me first. But the older you get, the wiser you become, the more food you eat, if you will, of life, you learn to realize, man, that sometimes just to say fuck it and float away is probably better than to always be bold and stand strong as a lion, right? Like, even a lion will fucking wake up and raise his head and be like, man, fuck your ass, I'm going back to sleep, nigga. You ain't worth it. You know what I'm saying? Take your little baboon ass back up the tree, nigga. I'm over here fucking sleeping with these flies, which is bad enough. You know, you have to literally learn to drop your ego at the end of the day, man. Every circumstance that I've ever been in, bro, even from the days where I was, I would wait for you to turn your back and then I would get a whole running ass start and blow you out of a fucking chair. You know what I'm saying? Like, those were situations of ego. Like, how dare my baby brother speak to me in that way? I'm the big brother. Like, nigga, stop that shit. Had I done that, perhaps our relationship may have been a little bit more fruitful and kinder to one another, as maybe I would have lifted more weights and maybe I would have been a little bit more better as, you know what I'm saying, as just a human being. Even with your twin, dude, like, that situation, it was all me, bro. It was all my ego. Even the times when I was incarcerated, bro, I got into it with some cholos who didn't think I was as nuts as I was, bro. They didn't understand that I came from a background of taking on two blockers at one time, bro, or getting jumped. Like, I've been in some shit getting locked up, bro, while I was incarcerated, and it was all ego. You're not going to do this for me. I'm Andre Rivers. I'm Panama Jack. I'm Panama from Cocky Riders. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to do this to me. That was my whole premise of getting myself into trouble, bro. And it don't matter who the fuck you are. If you put yourself over anybody in any situation, and as opposed to putting them first and maybe even hearing them out or even recognizing the situation from their point of view, you always going to land on your fucking face. Always, bro. And that's my lesson at 41, dude.
This episode of Detained is a production of Champloo Media. All episodes edited, recorded, and produced by me, Arish Rivers. Friendly reminder, you can find past and upcoming episodes at anchor.fm/detained. Feel free to follow along and keep in touch at facebook.com/detainedpodcast. As always, thanks for listening.
Champloo Media.